Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 116. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com. Morgan Gargis, friend of FilmNerds.com.
Listeners, this is Craig Hamilton with FilmNerds.com, and I'm with my best friend, Morgan Gargis.
Hello, hello.
So, Morgan Gargis comes up to visit me in Nashville once or twice a year, and we typically spend a lot of time in preparation planning what movies we're going to watch. And I thought this time we had the idea of picking a movie that neither of us had seen and discussing it on an FNU podcast. So Morgan Gargis, my good friend here, tell him what movie you picked, Morgan.
Well, the goal was to we wanted to pick a movie that neither of us have seen, which is a tough call since we're both movie lovers. And I went with The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, a classic, which was fortunately streaming on Netflix, so we had easy access, both of us. And this is a film I've always heard about, John Ford directing, John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, great pedigree here, a classic film, and, you know, almost a shelf of shame, to use our film nerds phrase. And so I thought it'd be a good choice, a good pick for us. And the idea was that we were going to both each watch the film independently and then get together this weekend and not necessarily review it, maybe share what we thought about it, but just talk about some of the themes of the film and kind of what we generally thought about the film. So...
Well, and I'm so glad you picked this movie.
Yeah, it's a great
because
film.
Because it is one of my all-time favorite movies, having watched this in the last week.
You can see you have copious notes.
Well,
there, right?
You know,
I'm a little ill-prepared.
We said, hey, let's watch The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. And
yes.
I did, and I can't say I'm so pleased that you picked this one. So we have the film opens with a train shot.
Yes.
Of a train shooting steam in the air.
Yes.
Chugging along the tracks.
And one thing I want to point out about this film. This film, if I'm not, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was released in 1962.
Correct.
And it's filmed in black and white.
That's correct.
And this is the 60s. I mean, this was 20 years after black and white. 20 years really after those classic John Ford westerns. And it was a stylistic choice, black and white. And the film has, and I don't want to get into it too much right now, but the film has a classical look with the black and white. It's gloriously shot.
It's
and anyway, I didn't want to get into that.
It is black and white, and it's interesting that you bring that up because.
But this movie is made in the 60s. Don't forget that.
Because John Ford had said it was a stylistic choice, because
yes.
When you shoot in black and white, specifically westerns, it's more technical. You have to consider the light and the shadows and
right.
How things look. There are many who believe that it was a studio choice, and that John Ford's. Saying it was a stylistic choice is just sort of
okay.
So, but that's just one word, one person's word against the other.
Right,
so,
I don't necessarily frankly, know the background, but I was just thinking about okay, this is the 60s. You know, clearly,
but that's
advanced.
That's an excellent point because most of their films in the 60s are color and
right.
And the
with
Academy
the
Awards
of,
are split up.
You know, movies that chose to go black and white for specific reasons.
It's interesting also that. It was you're cutting costs by shooting in black and white. And I think today
right.
It would be more expensive probably in most cases to shoot black
right.
And white. But anyways.
Anyway,
so,
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's,
go
it's
right
fine. Well, it's a
discussing.
Black and white movie. So
yes, I wanted to point that out right away.
A train pulls into a town called Shinbone.
Yes.
And we're greeted by an old, chubby, fat man.
The great Andy Devine. Who has appeared in other? I know he was in Stagecoach, the early John Ford, John Wayne western, and he has that distinctive voice that many of you may have remember from the animated Disney film Robin Hood. I believe he was Friar Tuck's voice. Correct? Was it Friar Tuck?
That could be true.
Or Sheriff of Nottingham.
One of those.
I can't remember. Anyway, he's got a very distinctive voice. You recognize it immediately. And it was great to see him back. Because I've seen Stagecoach. That movie came out in the 30s. And, you know, this is almost 30 years later. And it was great to see him, you know, as well.
Well, I think the opening shot is of a railroad.
Yes.
And I think the railroad represents so much in this
yes,
movie.
Yes, it's very symbolic in this movie.
When you watch this, you'll see that it's sort of a turning point. The laying of the railroad itself is a turning point in people's memory. It's almost like those that live in Shinbone after the railroad was laid down remember nothing from the times before it was laid down.
Right.
You've got the wild, wild west.
Yes, it's a clear watershed.
The railroad's laid down.
In this town.
And it is, now it's completely civilized.
Yes.
Whereas if you look at the flashback that we're going to talk about.
Yes.
You'll see that there's this fight between the wild west and the law. And perhaps it was a man named Ransom Stoddard that sort of helped bring this along, although he didn't necessarily
he was a catalyst in
absolutely
yeah.
So the train pulls up and we see Link, the marshal of the town.
Yes.
He's played by Andy Devine, as you mentioned.
I love Andy Devine. And he's great in this movie.
So we have a woman named Hallie.
Yes.
And a man named Ransom Stoddard.
Yes, played by the great Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart plays Ransom Stoddard, and Hallie immediately walks up.
Mm-hmm.
We see this look of this somber
yes.
look from Link
yes.
and a somber look from Hallie.
Yes.
Their gazes match, and they look at each other, and a bajillion words are said between the two in a matter
of
seconds.
There's history there. There's history there.
And the scenes that follow between these two, leading up to the flashback, say so much.
Yes.
And so much.
And it's all with looks and glances and, you know, you
absolutely.
Know there's a history there. And, you know, then we'll find it, you know, the movie's structure. The structure of this movie is very interesting, the way it's done in flashback.
So Jimmy Stewart plays a senator. He is Senator Ransom Stoddard.
Yes.
Everyone's very excited to see him back in town. And as a matter of fact, the newspaper boy doesn't
yes.
know who it is.
Right. He's young.
And there's the one of the train engineers says, that's Senator Stoddard. You could fill your newspaper with that.
Yes.
Which I think is very interesting that you could fill your newspaper with Senator Stoddard and
right.
what he has to say in his story.
I mean, he may be a senator.
And in the end,
how important really is this guy? We don't know.
But do they end up filling their newspaper with his story in the end?
We'll
see.
Yes.
We'll see. So,
the opening part of this movie, it's sort of mysterious. You don't just really understand what's going on, then it quickly settles into.
So
Stoddard has a story to tell.
Absolutely. So we have just
before we get to that, to catch
you up. So there are these moments between Hallie,
yes.
who is Senator Stoddard's wife, and Andy Devine. They get on a sort of little carriage.
Yes, they're headed. It appears to be to a funeral,
and Hallie comments on how much everything has changed. There's a high school. There's this and that. There's so many more structures in the town. It's more civilized, and she says so much has changed since she's been back. And Link says the railroad done that. The desert's still the same.
Right.
And. There's two conversations going on between these two. There's the conversation that the viewers see. The viewers that have seen the movie for the first time hear a conversation. Oh, it's changed so much. Oh, well, actually, it's just the railroad that did that. The desert's still the same.
Right.
But when you see this movie, when you understand what happens in the flashback, which we're going to talk about, you see that there's much more to this.
Yes.
So he says, would you like to take the cactus rose is in bloom. Would you like to take a look around? And she says, yes. And what do? They end up going to a burned down house
yes.
with cactus roses sprouting up
yes.
everywhere. Andy Devine, The character he plays the character of Link, so I'll refer to him as Link.
Yeah, the
sets
marshal.
Off the carriage. He's a marshal of the town. He walks up to amidst the cactus blossoms, the cactus roses, and he looks over at Hallie, and Hallie clutches the hat box sitting next to her on the carriage.
Yes,
and it immediately cuts back to Senator Stoddard, who has been, you know, rather easily convinced to give an interview to the town newspaper of the Shinbone Star, the Shinbone Star, which is the newspaper of that town.
Right.
So they want to know what he's he does take a little coaxing because Hallie returns.
Yes,
is that correct? Hallie and Link come back. They meet. Senator Stoddard.
Yes,
and they go into a room that has a coffin.
Yes,
and we don't know who this is.
And this is.
Is
just like a makeshift room. I mean, yeah, it's not like a funeral
room,
parlor. I think there's a sign actually up front. And it's sort of a little funny little, you know, like this guy, you know, this mortuary, like, performs all these other...
Right, right.
You it's know, a, it's multiple, a, yeah. you know, services for the town.
So they go in, Hallie, Ransom,
yes.
Link, and they meet their friend, who is an old, gray-haired black man
yes.
named Pompey.
Pompey, yes.
And he's very sad. They're all very sad. They all become very solemn, and they sit there, and they look at this coffin. And only Ransom looks inside the coffin. But the journalist from the Shinbone Star just seems to just annoys, just is bugs so much the Ransom Stoddard character, the senator, about giving an interview of why he's here and why he's mourning the loss of this unknown person
right.
in this coffin, that finally Senator Ransom Stoddard says, okay, I'll give you a story. He goes over to the newspaper and he begins to tell them the story
yes.
of Tom
Donovan.
Donovan.
Right.
That's just the name of Tom Donovan. So...
So, let me kind of sum up here a little bit. The opening movie is sort of a mystery. And we kind of, okay, this is going to be a flashback structure. And so, normally in flashback structure style or storytelling, we open with a mystery. Because we don't want to reveal our hand too quickly. We're going to hear the story later. And then at the end of the story, end of the movie, we're going to kind of see, you know, how it all circles back. And it's what we sort of are confused about in the beginning makes more sense in the end. And so we see this house, we see the cactus flower, we see these characters, we talk about change in the town, we talk about the railroad. These sort of scenes keep them in mind as you know
yeah,
they sort of implant
yeah, definitely.
In your memory as you watch the film, and as you go through this story, it makes it all the more powerful.
It really does because
I don't want to say too much now.
This opening segment, which takes place in
yes,
the present,
but it's
day,
very carefully, you know, it, shows you these
that's
images.
Right. These characters of which we know
and
virtually nothing about,
yeah.
they have relevance in the past, and the movie conveys to us there is relevance in the past.
But it just gives you.
But they're addressed
yeah.
very subtly.
Very subtly.
When it flashes back. And it addresses some of the nuances that it
yes.
has called to our attention from the beginning.
Right.
It is very subtle. It is not in your face at all.
No.
And not
it's
a ton
very
of attention called to
done.
Itself. Absolutely. For instance, the cactus rose. Link not being taken seriously.
Absolutely.
The newspaper. Tom Donovan wanting, or Ransom's wanting... Tom Donovan to be buried in his spurs and his gun and
yes.
his boots.
And even the newspaper, which plays a big role in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we have Ransom Stoddard telling the story to the journalists.
Yes.
And we flash back. So we have Ransom Stoddard telling him how he came to the West. He's an East Coast boy, a law student.
An attorney.
Who is traveling by carriage to the West, and he quotes, "Go West, young man, go West." That expression from the mid-19th century, and he their carriage is taken hostage. They're held up, if you will.
Immediately. It's the first, I believe it's the first scene in the flashback.
It's immediately. There's a carriage. It's being held up. The bandits demand the goods and the valuables by from everyone. And they take a trunk. They take a trunk from Ransom Stoddard, and it's just full of law books. But Ransom takes up for an older woman.
Yes.
And he gets beat by a guy who has a whip.
Yes.
And he gets beaten nearly to death.
Played by the great, this is Liberty Valance, played by the great Lee Marvin, who, you know, of course became famous later on in The Dirty Dozen, and he's just that, he's that masculine, tough guy.
Played by a young
Lee Marvin. Yeah, a young Lee Marvin. I don't even know if he had a movie appearance before this or not.
So, he's beaten nearly to death, and the next thing you know, here comes John Wayne.
Yes.
Leading a carriage to town. A young Hallie steps out of a building. Pompey is in the back, and they are carrying a beat-up Ransom Stoddard. And this is the following night. So he has been beaten and laying there for about a day.
He's in bad shape.
Tom Donovan, who's played by John Wayne, as I said.
Yes.
And Pompey and his friend Pompey
bring
him to safety. They are, Hallie more than willingly takes him into her parents' restaurant, kitchen, bar, if you will.
Yes.
And they nurse him back to health. So Hallie mentions that his reputation has preceded him. The story of Ransom taking up for this woman has come to the town before the broken down body of Ransom himself has. And Hallie mentions, as Tom Donovan has brought him in, and Hallie and her parents are nursing him back to health, Tom Donovan is watching him. And Tom Donovan himself is a rough cowboy who wears his gun on his belt.
Yes, it's John Wayne.
And yes, it is.
As you know,
it's the epitome of John Wayne. He's calling him Pilgrim constantly.
Which is the fact, you know, you look, you know, years later when people impersonated John Wayne as a caricature, Robin Williams, comedians, I think it's in the Dead Poets Society actually, they use the Pilgrim.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
And it's from this movie, which I didn't realize that. So, I was like, what? I never, because I had not seen this film yet. I didn't know what the Pilgrim John Wayne deal was. But yeah, it's great.
You know, and John Wayne does a pretty good John Wayne impression. So Hallie mentions, while she's nursing Ransom back to health, she mentions that he was taking up for an older woman and got beaten by Liberty Valance.
Yes.
And Tom Donovan hears her say this, and immediately Tom Donovan's respect is earned by Ransom's daughter.
Yes.
The fact that he took up for this woman, Tom Donovan says, you see this look on his face, and he says, it's told cinematically that the respect on behalf of Ransom Stoddard is earned for him. So, you know, Tom Donovan, I can't help but compare him to the Good Samaritan who picks up this guy on the side of the road and brings him back in and helps nurse him back to health. And he tells Hallie and her family, my credit's still good here. Give him whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Just like in that parable that Jesus told in the New Testament about the Good Samaritan.
Right.
Takes him to an inn and says, return him to his health, put all the expenses on my credit.
Right, but what's interesting, Tom Donovan, he's still kind of a rough character. I mean, he's still kind of a, you know, he comes in a room, he makes an impression.
He is. So we have Liberty Valance, who's the evil one, and we have Tom Donovan, who's equally or more so formidable and tough.
Right.
But he has a good heart, and he is a genuine individual who does not want to hurt anyone. So Tom Donovan says, Ransom mentions the fact that he wants to get vengeance on Liberty Valance by way of the law. And Tom Donovan says, well, you know, you need to carry one of these around. And he shows him his gun.
Right.
Ransom says, I don't want a gun. I don't want to kill him. I want to put him in jail.
No.
And Tom Donovan says, out here, a man solves his own problems. And Ransom says, you're as bad as he is. What kind of community
into
here?
Yeah. You know, Ransom even sort of gets on to Donovan. He's like, are we going to settle this with guns, with violence? You know, this is inhumane. This is uncivilized, you know. He sees that Donovan's trying to do the right thing, but the way he wants to go about it, he just doesn't approve of. He's a man, he is, you know, a man of education and a civilized, and believes that the world should be a civilized place and it doesn't need to be settled by violence, no matter what.
Where Ransom's coming in differently is that Ransom comes from a state and he has entered a territory.
Yes.
He's entered the West.
He is from the East Coast. Yes.
So, which begs the question, they're in the West. Out here, a man solves his own problems.
Right.
What kind of community have I come into here?
Right.
You have come out of a unionized state into a territory.
Right.
The Wild West. So, in a classroom scene, which happens later, there's a flag, the American flag.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you counted this, it has 38 stars.
Oh, okay.
So the flag with 38 stars, the 38th state was Colorado.
Okay.
So this movie takes place south of something they call the picket line.
Yes, it's constantly referred to in the movie.
It's actually a river.
Yes, it's
called
a river.
The Purgatory River.
Okay. I didn't know that, but I knew that
Purgatoire,
it was a river.
Or if it's French.
Okay.
So they call it the picket line. It's the Purgatory River. It
sort of the boundary.
It goes through Colorado.
Right.
The bottom southeastern
That's how they
section
sort of
Colorado.
Drew the map, essentially.
So the flag has 38 stars. Colorado is a state. They're in the Wild West.
Okay.
They cannot be in Colorado. I think it just is safe to say that this movie takes place in New Mexico.
Okay.
Or perhaps Oklahoma. I think it's New Mexico because it's desert.
Right.
And it's south of the picket line.
Right. They keep...
And this river, they keep mentioning this
picket
line.
They keep mentioning
it.
They want you to, you know, this idea of this boundary. You know?
So, yeah, right. So they are... This is the... Think of the eastern part of the United States as statehood.
Mm-hmm.
Civilized society.
Law and
the
order.
The West is just whatever you do...
You're on, every man for himself.
And that's what Tom Donovan understands. That's what Liberty Valance understands.
Yes, that's the way
and
it
that's
has been.
That's not what Ransom Stoddard understands.
No, he is a fish out of water.
So
this is a totally new experience for him. He doesn't understand it. He doesn't approve of it.
Right.
And he's beside himself.
Tom Donovan realizes the law has little value in the West, and carrying a gun is of the utmost importance. So you hear the name Tom Donovan before you see John Wayne. But when John Wayne looks up into the sort of near the camera, he doesn't break the fourth wall, but he looks up and he says, when he says his own name, you know he's the one in the coffin in the beginning
yes.
of the movie.
Yes.
And that's a great moment. That's a great dramatic irony because we know he dies.
Right.
At some point.
Right.
We know his dead body lies in that coffin from the beginning. And man, I tell you what, this coupled with Andy Devine's very emotional performance in the beginning grabs me.
Yeah.
From the get-go. I mean, right from the beginning.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Liberty Valance. So liberty. The word liberty means a state of being free within society, free from oppressive restriction or imposed by authority. It also means the power or scope to act as one pleases.
Oh, very good.
Doesn't that fit?
You think liberty is a good word, right.
But this is a bad man.
Exactly.
But think of the definition of liberty.
He's warped the definition of liberty.
The power or scope to act as one pleases. You know what valance is? You know what valance means?
Bravery.
A length of decorative drapery.
Oh,
attached
I'm thinking of valiant,
the,
excuse me.
Attached to a canopy or frame of a bed. Valance actually means a dust ruffle.
Okay.
How about that contrast for words?
Right, we go from sort of very masculine to almost feminine. And the name, it's a contradiction.
I think I love when characters' names fit their personality or contrast their personality.
Right, and it's not showy though. It's not drawing attention to itself. The movie doesn't.
No, it's in the title. It's in the title, right. And still it doesn't draw attention.
It sounds like a legend, which we'll get into in it later. Yeah. Well, it sounds like an old myth. This the man who shot Liberty.
Well, Mouse, and it turns out to be. Right. It turns out to be so.
Yes.
So.
Anyway, we cut I don't want to jump ahead.
Well, we cut to a scene in a restaurant where. Ransom.
This is the restaurant, by the way, where restaurant. Ransom is
Hallie's family's restaurant.
Right.
He's washing dishes to pay for being able to live.
His room and board.
Hallie and her parents, who are, I believe, of Norwegian descent, and they are very gracious,
hardworking,
and they're more than happy to help him out. Right. And so Ransom is a hard worker. He's washing dishes, and he's also waiting tables, which. In the West, back then, a man waiting tables.
Right. Is sort of a joke. And I want to bring this up now, and there's another scene in the movie, which is a very pivotal scene. There's this detail in that scene I want to bring up. But this is a movie also that deals with not only civilized society versus the uncivilized Wild West, but also masculinity in the West versus femininity, and where a man's role is there, and... Here's, you know, the educated man, you know, who really doesn't, he's not really self-conscious that he's, you know, washing dishes and waiting tables. He does what he feels like he needs to be done. He doesn't take any shame in that. He doesn't look at it as a masculine, feminine thing.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
Right. And it comes into play later in a scene that I want to bring up.
Yes, yeah.
But Stewart, the way he plays it, you know, he is the all, you know, from It's a Wonderful Life to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Stewart plays... the everyman, and you identify with this man, and he is sort of your entry point into this film and story. And anyway, I just wanted to bring up that whole masculine thing
that's a good point
in the Wild
West,
because
he insists on
Ford is sort of commenting on, you know, the genre, how, you know, the John Wayne, quote unquote, John Wayne Western is this masculine shoot 'em up, black and white, hero, villain sort of deal. This movie shakes that up. It shakes that idea.
And Ransom insists on waiting tables because he knows it will
help. He's very thankful about what they've done for him.
And so let's say, Liberty Valance comes into town.
Yeah.
He comes into the restaurant.
Yeah.
We can just
makes a big scene.
He makes a big scene. Everyone fears him.
Mm-hmm.
Liberty Valance, the initials are LV. And I have to say, being a Harry Potter fan, as I said, I appreciate when characters' names hint at their attributes or contrast their attributes. But the initials of Liberty Valance are LV, which are also the initials of Lord Voldemort, who strikes fear into everyone.
Very good.
Whenever he walks into a room, it comes silent. Fear, people are scared of him.
Yeah.
And that's indeed what happens in this film.
Oh, yeah.
He walks into this restaurant.
No one stands up to him.
Nobody stands up to him.
He just quiets down. Shoves away around.
He walks up to a table. He says, "This steak is mine," virtually.
Yeah, he's
and
a bully.
And they leave the table.
He's a bully.
And they leave the table, and he eats their steak, and they go somewhere else. Tom Donovan is the opposite of Liberty Valance. He's friendly with everyone. He walks into that restaurant. When he walks into that restaurant, before Liberty Valance does, everyone says, "Hey, Tom." He says, "Hey, so-and-so, how are you doing? Hey, hey."
Yeah.
And he goes and sits down, and he's very friendly. He's just as tough as Liberty Valance.
Right.
But not, or tougher, but not nearly as mean. And so I see Ransom
as
this guy between good and evil. Because what happens is Ransom takes a plate out. We're told it's Tom Donovan's steak, but I'm not sure that that's the case. And Liberty Valance... sees the guy he's just beaten nearly half to death, sees him in town waiting at table, doing a woman's job, and he trips him, and the steak falls on the ground. And Tom Donovan speaks up, and he says, "That's my steak." I don't think that was his steak, because Ransom puts the steak on somebody else's table later when he picks it up.
That, actually.
But Tom
that
Donovan,
makes sense
and, but it may have been, he may have just been putting it on somebody else's table, but Tom Donovan says, sticking up for Ransom, a man who he respects, as we mentioned earlier, says, "That's my steak, Liberty. You pick it up." So Tom Donovan takes him to task, and he says, "You pick up the steak."
Right.
Ransom picks up the steak, and he says, he's literally standing between the two, pleading for law and order. So you've got pure evil in Liberty Valance, and you've got good in Tom Donovan.
Right, and what's interesting, too, is that Ransom is sort of... He's addressing Donovan and Valance. He's like, both are uncivilized. He's not picking sides here. He's even indicting, after what Valance has done to
him. He's indicting both men.
Yes.
Even though Tom Donovan, his actions are meant for him.
And even after what Valance did to Ransom.
Right. Ransom picks up the steak. And Stoddard puts it on the table.
Wants civilized.
And he says, there, it's done. Liberty Valance takes out a coin and he throws it on the ground in front of Tom Donovan and says, there, have a stake on me. Tom Donovan does not pick up the money. And he's offended at that.
Right.
So, there's that scene. We cut to a classroom scene, and as I mentioned, the flag with 38 stars, Colorado being a state, which suggests that they're not in a state. They're in a territory. They're in the West. So, they're learning to read and write. Ransom Stoddard is teaching the whole town, the young ones, Hallie,
even the marshal. She admits earlier that she's illiterate.
He's more than willing to teach her how to read.
And she's very proud to help out in the way, because he believes this is important.
And she's helping other. And Pompey,
yeah,
is there learning how to read. Lots of individuals from the town.
There's a few children in the classroom, but the students are filled with people from the town, adults. All ages.
So he's teaching them how to read, and what happens? Tom Donovan walks in, and he says, there's a publication in the newspaper. Is that
right? Is this when we address the issue of the election?
Right, so, yeah.
Well, the headline in the paper is talking about that the cattlemen want states' rights.
So cattlemen are north of the Pickett Wire.
State, right.
Cattlemen are in the state of Colorado, if we're assuming the Pickett Wire represents the Mercatory River, which is in Colorado.
Okay.
And they have hired Liberty Valance to hire other guns to enforce their thoughts to the southern territories.
Right.
Ransom has caught on to this. The good Mr. Peabody, who runs the Shinbone Star at that time.
By the way, Mr. Peabody, what a great character.
Oh, he's so great. Very bravely prints the truth.
Yes.
He's a drunkard.
But he's a flawed man.
He very adamantly prints the truth.
Yes.
And very courageously prints it. And Tom Donovan walks in and says, hey, do you realize you're being printed? This is being printed. Liberty Valance will be here very soon whenever he hears about this.
Right.
And insists, and he commands Pompey to go back to his house and finish building what he was building.
Right, to finish up where he left.
So, so we'll talk about that in a second. So the class is dismissed. And Ransom begins to understand that Liberty Valance is going to come after him to kill him.
Right.
Ransom goes to Tom Donovan's house, where we see Pompey's actually building on another room. Tell the listeners what this addition to Tom Donovan's house, who's this for?
This is for Hallie. And so we learn about the relationship between Donovan and Hallie. And so they have a relationship, or it's implied earlier, but it's implied,
yeah.
And I don't necessarily know the extent, I don't know how far along in the relationship they may be, or it's not really clear.
Well, her dad says something about if, Tom Donovan proposes, she should marry him or something like
now
that.
Now remember, this is the Wild West, and again, it goes back to our issue of masculinity and femininity, I think, where... You know, this is maybe what Donovan wants, and but it's interesting. Hallie is portrayed, and especially in those scenes in the restaurant, as a very independent woman, and so, that's key in this film. She has, ideas as well, and she's learning how to read and write, and she has this connection with Ransom as well. So it's not really clear what she really wants as far as Donovan
goes. It's the film doesn't address her wants. It implies that her and Tom.
But I think the other issue, though, is Donovan has this sentimental side to him, right, and he wants to settle down.
Right.
And he, you know, he may not be quite the tough guy that we sort of think that he is, and he just wants kind of a quiet life as well.
So Ransom pulls up to Donovan's property, and Donovan calls him out, and he says, "Listen, I'm building this for Hallie."
Right.
Ransom says, "I think everyone takes that for granted, that or everyone assumes that you and Hallie are together." Mm-hmm. Showing us that Ransom has no ulterior motives for Hallie. But Donovan is a little bit skeptical in that Ransom's teaching her how to read and write, and he's helping her family. Right. And Donovan has a little bit of, I don't know if it's jealousy as much as it is.
He may not necessarily think that Ransom's coming in between him or anything. Right, but this is not what he's used to.
Right.
This is not
I think this is really great of his character to actually bring this up to Ransom in this way. And so he says, "You know, I'll teach you how to shoot."
Yes, and the great handgun sequence. Yes,
and he has Ransom put up little cans of paint here and there on posts. And before he's even done putting up the cans of paint, he's shooting the cans of paint down.
Yeah,
and he says something like, "You know, this is how Liberty Balance will come at you."
Right. This is not playing games.
Right.
He's
going to come at you.
This is the real deal.
Yeah. So
he kind of realizes, I think, that Valance is in over his head at this, you know.
And Rance walks up and punches Tom Donovan to the ground. Yeah. Because he almost shoots him in the head.
Yeah, again, it goes back to, what are you, are some kind of animal? Are you shooting at me like this? What are you, showing off?
But they're friends.
Yeah,
they're friends.
They are.
Tom Donovan and Ransom Stoddard are friends at this point.
Yeah.
Because they have shared this idea of Hallie being between them, sort of, even though Ransom did not really try to woo her in any way, and in fact assumed that she was with Tom Donovan to begin with. And Tom Donovan's a tough, tough guy, but is having second thoughts, thinking that Hallie may have feelings for Ransom.
Yeah.
But still wants
humanizes him,
and he still wants to teach him how to survive.
Which means he cares.
Right, which means he cares.
Right, he's not just in it for himself.
I mean, this is such a great movie.
Talking about it now takes me back. I mean, it's such a great, it's such well told story as well. There's so much going on here.
And I do want to address the actors that played these roles were old in their lifetime.
I mean, this is the 60s now. You have to remember, John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart have been movie stars since the 30s. So this is essentially 25 to 30 years, you know.
Yeah. And they're played older in the present day, and they're made to look younger in the past.
Which I think is sort of a comment, too.
They're not playing themselves in either storylines.
True.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
So I do want to bring that up. But, so we have Tom Donovan and Ransom Stoddard. They had this confrontation, but there's a mutual respect and there's a friendship. Indeed. So there's...
And I think also that Donovan sees that Ransom stands up for what he believes in and is not this weak guy.
Absolutely not. There's a respect earned from the beginning.
Right.
Yeah. There's this voting.
Yes, there's this whole other thing going on about essentially a vote for states' rights. This is a territory.
So they elect two individuals from this town.
Shinbone as delegates.
As delegates for this territory.
So they have this little meeting to vote for the two delegates.
So you have Ransom, who's sort of, he's the attorney, so he's leading the proceedings, mm-hmm. and you have Mr. Peabody, who we mentioned earlier, who's the editor of the Shinbone Star, the local paper, who's taking notes, and you have Tom Donovan, who's there, who's the good guy, tough guy, and you have Mr. Peabody, the editor of the newspaper, is also a drunkard, as we mentioned. But he also,
by the way, I want to stop here for a second.
He also wants a drink, and Tom Donovan. Yeah. Tom Donovan says the bar's closed. And he says, "The bar's closed. That's taking democracy much too far."
Right.
Which is, I
love
it
because this whole mob of people are just wanting to drink, you know, and is this. By the way, this made me want to bring up this point about this movie. It sounds kind of like this serious sort of drama. There is a lot of humor in this film. The Andy Devine character as the marshal is hilarious. He's sort of this dim-witted guy who's sort of the supposed lawman of this town, but he really doesn't know what to do. He's a bumbling sort of guy, but he's sort of lovable about it. You don't really, you know, no one really knows what to do with him. He's sort of the marshal just by, you know, default almost. But he plays the part well. And so what's interesting is that, okay, you've got the marshal who is sort of a dim-witted, sort of cowardly type. Doesn't really want to stand up to Liberty Balance. Doesn't want to have anything to do with
it. Oh, no, absolutely not.
He's just kind of a baby. And then you've got Mr. Peabody, but who's this intellectual guy and a great newspaper editor, but he's a drunkard. So he's got this flaw. You've got so you've got all these sort of tropes, these character, you know, that you may have seen in 1,000 old westerns. And I love how this town, Shinbone, is sort of portrayed as the... You got the saloon and the, you know, it's sort of the cliche western town, but then the characters, while on the surface, take on the cliche deep down. They may look the
part.
There's
another level to it.
There's another level to it. And it may be for comic relief, or it may be as a comment on something else. My whole theme, I'm going to talk about later, masculinity, femininity, and civilized, uncivilized. And it's just, it even runs through the characterizations, not just the plot. So anyway, I wanted to bring
No,
that
that's
up.
A good point, because that's what makes this movie so great.
And it's fun. It makes it entertaining and fun to
watch.
There's
a deeper level to the characters.
The women are strong.
And there's a deeper level to the story.
Right. Yes.
So there, that's, so
people
want,
aren't necessarily identified by their occupation, like you would see in an old western.
So they want statehood, which means protection, right, as ransom services. It means protection for our farms, our fences, and the school for our children, and our prospects for our future.
We will get protection from the federal government. And
so Ransom, who does Ransom nominate?
Is it Donovan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He nominates Tom Donovan, who refuses the nomination. That tells you a lot.
He doesn't want that.
A lot about this character.
He doesn't want this glory.
I mean,
he doesn't want this attention.
So he refuses the nomination. Who rises up? Liberty Valance rides up. He hears what's going on.
Yes. He wants
to rides up. And he's a hired gun from the cattlemen up north. He does not want this territory to become a state.
No.
So we know that because Ransom Stoddard says, or someone says, you don't live south of the picket wire.
You had no say.
You can't vote here.
Right.
And so Liberty Valance, he finds that negative headline about him killing the two sodbusters. Which is a big term in Shane. Is that where that term that I know from?
I don't know.
Sodbuster or somewhere. So he loses the vote for... no one votes for him except his two cronies.
His two...
One, the woman that we've seen from Shane.
Yeah.
And who's also in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, correct? He's...
You know, I didn't know that.
Whatchamacallit. What's that guy's name?
Is it Lee Van Cleef?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I thought they looked familiar.
So,
So, of course, they're going to support Valance no matter what. I mean, they're his, you know, cronies. That's like you said. I mean, they're yes men. They're going to go along with that. Because, look, Valance bullies them probably just like he does the town and anyone else he runs into. So, Valance comes into this this setting, this when they're voting for the delegates, and he thrusts his, you know, weight around and tries to get a delegate nomination for himself.
And he fails massively because nobody votes for him except those two. And who ends up getting the votes is Ransom Stoddard.
Yes.
As well as our good friend.
Mr. Peabody. Does Peabody get the delegate?
He does.
Yeah.
He does. So those
Which
two
comes into play later.
Right. So those two are the two delegates. So that night after the voting... Yeah, Mr. Peabody, who's in his printing press, and he's drunk.
We can know.
And he's really drunk. Yeah, but he says that quote again from the beginning that Ransom Stoddard quoted to the present-day journalists. Right. He says it differently. He says it's really funny. He says, go west, old man, and grow young with the country.
Okay.
Instead of go west, young man, which I thought was
interesting,
pretty funny. And he also quotes from Henry V. Yeah. He quotes a couple of different monologues.
Yeah, this from Henry guy, V. He's well read. He's an educated guy. Yeah, he's a drunkard, absolutely. But he's educated.
He is so well educated that in the West, he's quoting sort of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
While he's drunk.
It's probably why he drinks, because he does. He can't really relate to a lot of people in the town, probably, you know? So he has his own best friend.
Yeah, so he quotes.
Drink.
He actually quotes Henry V in Act 4, Scene 3. But when the blast of war blows in our ears, and then Act 3, Scene 1, those in England now asleep shall think themselves accursed.
Okay.
So he leaves. Okay, so he snuffs out his candles. In the printing press.
Yes, yes.
And he, which is, it's what a great cinematic sequence here.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
He goes from light into complete dark by snuffing out the candles, and he comes back. He goes for a drink, and he comes back. It's just as dark as he left it. Mm-hmm. He lights the candles, but who's sitting there? Just standing there in his office. Liberty Valance.
Yeah, with
his two cronies. And that's an amazing visual right there when the light comes back on. So, needless
this
to say,
this is a pretty intense scene, too.
Liberty Valance beats
comes up.
Peabody.
Which is a pretty rough beat.
It's a rough beating, they think Peabody is dead, which is why they stop beating him. And much of the town watches outside and does nothing.
Right. It's that sort of, you know. It's not my responsibility sort of deal. This is the Wild West. We've seen this before.
And he's not dead. He's not dead. His printing press is destroyed. There's paper everywhere.
Yeah.
He's not dead.
No.
They take him somewhere. But Ransom Stoddard is waiting outside because we failed to mention that Liberty Valance calls Ransom Stoddard out at that voting. And he says, I'll beat her tonight.
Right.
You're going to run away.
And I want to point something out here because really, to this point, other than some of the humor and the way the story is told and some of the characterizations, it's sort of like you can tell it's sort of leading up to this climax of a High Noon style climax.
Exactly.
We're going to, you know, Ransom or Donovan or someone is going to meet Valance in the streets and they're going to have a showdown.
And Liberty Valance basically says, I'm going to be here tonight.
Right.
And so that Tom Donovan addresses Ransom Stoddard and says, are you going to... Right away.
I mean, they
are you going
to
be here?
Right.
I wish I had gotten to you sooner to train
for this
you.
To come.
Yeah, I wish I could have trained you more on this handgun thing. So, Valance beats Peabody nearly to death,
it's pretty rough.
He walks outside, and Ransom is there waiting for Liberty Valance, isn't he? So,
yes. Oh, and I want to point something. This is what I was going to talk about earlier about the whole masculine thing. What is Ransom wearing when he comes out to face Valance?
Is he wearing his waiter?
He's wearing the apron.
Yeah.
So here he is.
He's still doing his job.
But here he is wearing an apron, getting ready to confront this tough guy.
Because he's still earning, because I remember this from the movie, he still has 3 days and nights to pay back to Hallie's family before he can leave.
Right, exactly. But my point is that I mean, Ransom is tough enough to meet this guy in the street, but he has no...
Right.
He has no concern about how he appears, about any of that. He just knows that this is something that I have to do. And he just goes out in his apron.
Yeah.
And it gets back to that whole, okay, he doesn't look at the tough guy that you see in an old
Western.
That's
right, yeah.
Here is the Gary Cooper from High Noon wearing an apron.
That's an excellent
point.
In the streets.
And
that's a very good
image,
point.
You know, strikes me. And, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because Liberty Valance taunts Ransom with several shots. He shoots a flower pot hanging close to his head. He shoots near his feet.
Right.
He shoots his arm. He shoots a hole in
his arm. Yeah, he injures him in his arm.
And Rance drops his gun, and he virtually stumbles back to his gun, and Liberty Valance is saying, get your gun. This one's coming right between your eyes. Ransom picks up his gun and shoots him dead.
Yes.
Liberty Valance falls dead. No one to mourn his death. But his two cronies. And then one of the great characters of this movie that doesn't get a lot of screen time is the very, very, very drunk physician.
Oh, yeah. He has a great line.
He says,
he knows the line.
He kicks
Give him, me a bottle of whiskey.
Give me a bottle of whiskey. Takes a huge swig, kicks Liberty Valance over on his back, looks at him and says, he's dead, and he walks away.
Right. Which gets back to my, okay, you got the town doctor, the town newspaper editor, the town marshal. They all have these flaws, every one of them. You know, it's a screwed up town.
And that physician actually has a great line where he tells Link to, when Link is scared Liberty Valance is going to come into town, he says, I suggest you get your supper and go to bed. Which I thought was a great line.
Yes.
So, Ransom Stoddard shoots Liberty Valance dead in the middle of the town.
And it's done in such a quick sort of way. I mean, yeah, it's dramatic because Ransom is shot and is injured. But, yeah, I mean, it's done in a way that's... I keep going back to High Noon because that's essentially what... You know, that movie was building to this climax and at High Noon, Gary Cooper. But this movie, it almost feels a little anticlimactic.
So...
Anyway, go ahead.
So, Tom Donovan shows up. And he says... And while Rance is in the back at Hallie's restaurant, I believe. Tom Donovan says, I'm sorry I showed up late.
Right.
I wish I was here earlier.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
He was sort of out of the picture.
I'm so sorry I showed up late.
Right.
And he walks by the cart carrying Liberty Valance's body and just sort of glances at it. He kind of looks over at the... You don't really see the body, but he kind of glances at it and just walks by. And Tom Donovan gets really drunk in the bar. He gets really drunk and he becomes unruly. Not in an evil Liberty Valance way, but he begins to, just like Liberty Valance threw things at people in bars and broke things, he begins to throw money at the band and says, why aren't you playing? And throws money at them. And he breaks things, but not in an evil kind of way, but he becomes unruly like Liberty Valance did.
Which I have a comment on that I want to talk about later. A theory on that scene.
So Tom Donovan, drunk.
Yes.
Off his table.
And he's going after... Valance's two henchmen, right?
And he beats the crap out of them very easily.
Yeah,
there's
that
no
scene,
contest.
Right? It's that
there's
scene.
No contest.
Yeah. No.
He takes a bottle of whiskey home, and he sets fire to the room that Pompey was building for Hallie.
Yes.
And he's so drunk, he passes out. Pompey goes in there, pulls him out, saves his life. The whole house burns down. Now, I remember
you know, thinking back, by the way, I don't
mentioned
mean to jump
a house. We mentioned a burned down house before, didn't we?
Yes. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one of those movies like you look back in hindsight and you go, oh, okay. You're kind of confused in the moment, and of course things are revealed later. But I don't want to spoil anything at the moment. But what's interesting is that this is all the drinking, the carousing that he does in the bar. The burning of the house. They make it such a deep point to really show this because it's going to reveal itself later.
So he intends to burn down the Hallie section of his house.
Right.
Because that's basically him. For some reason that we don't know.
No.
He is cutting off Hallie from his life.
Right.
By burning down the section of his house that he has not yet completed building. We don't know why he's doing that.
No.
He passes out, though. The fire begins to spread to his portion of the house, and Pompey saves him. So,
I love that scene, too, when they free the horses out of the pasture, and they go, you've got to save the horses. He's got to save the horses.
So,
you know, that's all that he cares about.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that is...
That's human life.
That's
you know,
a scene
that's life.
That could pass by, and a viewer not really catch that. Right. But that's just a pure, unbridled, human,
we gotta
wild
save the horses.
Scene.
Yeah.
So
I'm doing all this craziness to the house, but we gotta save the horses.
We cut to another town. Ransom and Peabody.
Yes.
Are the delegates.
Are the delegates who had to show
they
up.
Show up to another town.
It's called Capital City.
So they attend a town hall meeting of Capital City, which is statehood against cattlemen.
Right. They're getting ready to make their case to the...
And the cattleman guy that makes his case, he nominates this guy that doesn't say a word. But the guy that does the nominating says all the words leading up to nominating this guy, and then he says all of the words that argue against Ransom Stoddard becoming the representative. And in fact, he brings up, he pontificates, and he does all this BSing, and at the very end, he says, why would we nominate someone that killed an honest citizen? An honest citizen, like Liberty Balance. But while he's saying this stuff, guess who shows up? Tom Donovan, right. Of all people, shows up to Capitol City.
Right.
Sits on the staircase.
Is it a coincidence?
And Rance is here. Rance is being called out for killing someone. He remembers. He meant to stand up for the law.
Right.
Which doesn't mean anything in the West. And he goes back. He goes back to the lobby. And he's done. You see it in his face. He's done. Tom Donovan walks back with him. And he convinces Rance. And he says, you know what? And then Rance says, you know, I killed Liberty Valance. So why should I be? Tom Donovan says, what? You didn't kill Liberty Valance. Wow. Ransom Sutter looks at him like. He slowly looks at it, at him like in this hopeful look, like, you mean I didn't kill Liberty Valance? Like, I hope I didn't.
He shot the gun.
He shot the gun.
He shot the gun.
Like, you mean I didn't do it?
He thought he did.
Tom Donovan says, you did not kill Liberty Valance, Rance. And there's a flashback.
Where we revisit the scene from the perspective
of a side alley. Where Pompey's holding a rifle.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And there's this great scene.
It is.
Where Tom Donovan's on the other side of the alley. And they're watching all this play out. The scene between Liberty Valance and Ransom Stoddard.
Right.
And you see Tom Donovan look at Pompey and say, Pompey? Pompey tosses him the rifle. Tom Donovan just holds the rifle. And Tom Donovan does not aim the rifle until the second before he pulls the trigger.
Right.
And he shoots Liberty Valance dead just as Ransom Stoddard pulls the trigger on his handgun.
That's right.
That is a mind-blowing moment.
It is
that goes up there with one of the best pull-the-rug-out-from-under-you moments in cinematic history.
It's not self-conscious about it. It's one of those... It's not a manipulative jerk twist.
It's organic.
If you look back, it's one of those things, if you look back, it all has been sort of adding up to this.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, Ransom couldn't have shot him.
No.
But we would have bought it.
Yeah, because...
And we did buy it.
He's good, right.
So he tells him the story, and we cut back to present day. Right. This is an incredible sequence of a flashback.
Oh, it's great.
So we flash forward, and Tom Donovan says to Ransom Stoddard, in reference to Hallie, you taught her to read and write. Now give her something to read and write about. Mm-hmm. Ransom Stoddard marches right back in that meeting. The place cheers. It erupts. And Tom Donovan walks away. So we return to present day.
Where Stoddard's been telling
Scott,
the story.
Mr. Scott is the guy who's the present day editor of the Shinbone Star. Who has strong-armed Senator Ransom Stoddard, who was governor of that state. We don't know the state. I think it's New Mexico. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
He was senator. So this state has evolved.
Right.
It has come from a territory to a state.
Right.
There's high schools. There's towns. There's railroads.
Right.
And even Hallie says, once it was a wilderness, now it's a garden. Aren't you proud?
Right.
So because of him, he's done all this.
Right.
But he was voted in because he was the man who shot Liberty Valance.
That's right.
So Mr. Scott, who's the present-day editor of the Shinbone Star,
says the great line.
He stands up. He tears up the interview papers that he's been writing for this whole story. And Ransom Stoddard, played by Jimmy Stewart, says, you're not going to use the story, Mr. Scott? And Mr. Scott says, no, sir. This is the West, sir. When the legend becomes fact... Print the legend.
Print the legend.
The West still plays by different rules. Even though it's a
After
state.
After all of this, right.
This is the West, sir. We still play by different rules.
Right.
Rance leaves, and he goes back to Tom Donovan's coffin. What's on top of it?
Cactus flower.
That's right. I'm convinced Hallie put it on there. Because when Link looked down at those cactus roses, she clutched her hat box, which would have been a perfect container to carry that.
And they make such a point in the beginning of the movie to show you that hat box.
They do.
That you know something's going on there. Yeah.
Hallie and Rance leave on a train.
A train, just like in the beginning of the movie. Just like bookended.
And they leave on the train, and the conductor.
Yeah, he comes up to
him. He comes up and he says, you know what?
Gives me chills thinking about it.
He says, 48 hours, you're going to be back in Washington because we're going to get you on the express train.
Yeah, we're going to make this fast for you, fast trip for you, whatever you need.
And Ransom tells this guy, he says, I'm going to write to the officials of this railroad, and I'm going to thank them for their kindness. And this conductor says, nothing's too good for the man who shot Liberty Valance. And there's this dead look straight ahead, not at each other, straight ahead on behalf of Rance. Yeah. And Hallie, they go from being happy to, look, it was once a wilderness, now it's a garden, aren't you proud? To nothing's too good for the man who shot Liberty Valance.
Right.
And they both just, their look goes from glee to solemnness.
Right.
Because that's why he's voted in.
And that's not what he wanted. I mean, that's not how he wanted to get it.
But he didn't actually do it.
Even though he didn't actually
do it. He didn't actually do it.
But he became... But he got all the credit for it, and Stoddard, or not Donovan, knew he could do what he needed to do, but he could do it in the shadows, and he didn't have to take credit for it. For what was right, for what Stoddard had, you know, could do for this town, for the West, and everything else, and look what became of it, and. What I love about this movie is that it takes those cliches of a Western, of a John Wayne Western that you've seen 1,000 times before, that John Ford himself has directed, many of them great films, and turns it on its head. We are going to tear apart the cliche, and we are going to invent something new. We're going to have John Wayne not be the hero of the story. You know? And he's okay with that. He knows he's doing the right thing for the greater good. I mean, do you agree with that?
Absolutely. 100%. So, to me, this movie also...
Which is moving. It's a selfless act.
It's completely sacrificial.
Yes. And there's nothing really more moving. Roger Ebert once said about the movie Leaving Las Vegas, the reason he loved that movie so much, the Nicolas Cage film... He said, there's nothing... He says, I don't usually find movies where bad things happen sad. What really moves me in a film is when a character does, you know, acts in a selfless way. And that's absolutely true. It's relatable. Because look at what they're doing. It's not just... He could have so easily have done it his way and taken over the town however he wanted and... He could have done it. Donovan could have done what he wanted to do in Shinbone and got what he wanted. But he saw something in Stoddard. He saw something in Hallie. He did it in the alley. He was in the shadows for the greater good of this town because he knew that Stoddard, you know, really could, you know, provide some change in this town. And for the Wild West in general. Because it was for the greater good. I know that's kind of a rambling explanation. But
no,
you see what
good.
I'm saying?
No, absolutely.
It's a selfless act. And it's very moving to look back on that. And then, of course, everyone else thinks it's something different. It's a legend. People love a legend. It makes for a good story.
Yeah.
It makes for a compelling story. Here's the man who, you know... I mean, Donovan could have easily got shot Valance. It's not a story there.
Right.
But Stoddard, this attorney from out east, you know, this fish out of water.
Absolutely.
It's a great story.
And to me also, the movie says a lot about how quickly people are forgotten after they die.
Yeah, I mean...
It really...
And then you go back to that first scene in the funeral.
They have no idea who Tom Donovan is.
They have no idea who Tom Donovan is.
And it goes back to what I said about
the railroad. His life ended... And let me point something. Remember I said how that scene when he gets drunk in the bar? and he burns down the house, how that's so critical. Donovan knew that that was the end of his life. He knew what he was doing was the end. He would not be remembered for anything. He was making a conscious decision on what he did.
Anybody, you know? And anybody that came after that railroad was laid down, whenever that was, it's almost as if that was the dividing line
right.
between what they knew before and what they knew after.
Right, and this movie also is about all these different institutions in a town. It gets into the press, education, politics, progress in a variety of ways. It looks at it from different angles. And so it takes on this whole concept of a society and a town and what makes it up. And it just, you're viewing it through different lenses, progress. So, yeah.
You know, the guy that played Pompey, his name is Woody Strode. He was a star athlete at UCLA, and after the war was one of the first black athletes to integrate the NFL. Mm. He played for the
LA, was great in this movie.
Played for the LA Rams, and the Rams are now moving from St. Louis back to LA this year. Lee Marvin's widow said that The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance was her all-time favorite
of
all the movies that her husband made.
And he made some great movies.
And
I think it's a great role for Marvin, too, because he's a bully, and you just see how pathetic he is. He's got this whip. It's just so barbaric.
It's a whip, yeah.
But, no, you know, he has two henchmen that, of course, suck up to him, but nobody really cares about Liberty Valance and what he's up to.
Supposedly, Sergio Leone's favorite film is The Man Who Shot Liberty
Valance. Really? Well, he went on to make some great... Westerns that also challenged the genre. You know, the spaghetti westerns, which completely obliterated the old cliches.
Which also included Lee Van Cleef.
Yes, who is in The Good and the Bad and the Ugly. Yes.
Roger Ebert said that The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is the most pensive and thoughtful of the Ford Wayne westerns.
Absolutely. And I've only seen a handful, but... And he's made some... I mean, look, John Ford was a genius director, and he wasn't just making genre... He can make a genre western. He could go out to the West and film this beautiful vistas in the Wild West and just beautiful films, but there was always something more to John Ford. Because, I mean, let's don't forget, this is the guy who made Grapes of Wrath, which was a movie about something. It was about society. It was about the Great Depression. It was, I mean, it's one of those moving, I mean, of course, John Steinbeck wrote the novel, but Ford translated Steinbeck into a film that's just probably one of the most moving films of all time. And so, yeah, years later, he was comfortable enough challenge, and look, it's kind of brave on John Ford and John Wayne to make a film like this years later. I guess they were confident enough they could do it at this point, 30 years later, because... They were confident. And, yeah, they're going to entertain you with a good story, but they're also going to try to say something. And they're also going to sort of poke holes in the genre that made them famous. Which is interesting. That could have backfired. Audiences could have been like, this isn't a Western. Why isn't John Wayne the hero? Why isn't John Wayne getting all the accolades? Why isn't John Wayne the man who shot Liberty Valance? He's always the man who shot Liberty Valance.
He was.
That's the thing. Yes, but he didn't get
the credit.
That wasn't
for
the legend.
So John Wayne made this film in 1962, as well as The Longest
Day, which is supposed to be a great film.
I've not seen it.
I think it's on Netflix.
Incredible film. It is an incredible film.
But my point is that Wayne was confident enough, I think, at this point in his career. I don't know this for certain, but you can just tell where he was okay taking sort of a back seat. You know?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because from what I've read about this, he had to take a back seat to Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm. I believe his name rolled in the credits before Stewart, or he took...
Right, first billing.
But Stewart got a higher priority as far as what as John Ford was concerned.
Right, because John Ford, John Wayne just went hand in hand.
Right.
There's a marketing thing, I'm sure.
I'm not sure that John Ford respected John Wayne as much in those later days.
But it's so interesting, though, that the movie is sort of about that, though.
It really is, yeah, it's interesting.
John Wayne taking second billing to
Ransom's daughter. Exactly. That's exactly right, yeah.
So my question, though, is that was John Wayne okay with that? Was he aware of it? Was he sort of accepting that he was growing older? You know, he couldn't be this Western action star that he once was. Of course, he went on to make other Westerns.
I think you could argue that John Wayne was the focal point of the whole film.
That's true, but in a different way. Not in the mainstream way.
No, not in the mainstream way, but you can make that argument.
That's true, because it's a more thoughtful film. I'm not saying John Ford's Westerns aren't thoughtful, but this is something different.
This is different, and I think that you could argue that this might be his second best performance.
Yeah.
Of his career.
Of course, I need to pull up the filmography of John Ford, John Wayne.
By nature of the story itself. The Searchers is my favorite John Wayne Ford movie.
Yeah.
But The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is not far behind.
I think I prefer Valance over The Searchers. Of course, I need to watch The Searchers again.
John Wayne takes an avant-garde, cavalier leadership role in that movie.
That's
true. He's a very pioneer-esque sort of...
it's a great film. It's a wonderful masterpiece of a film. But I think Valance is taking on a whole new identity.
Oh, it totally is.
Of
it
something totally is. I don't think you've seen.
The Searchers is a very straightforward mission.
Right. Which is great.
Valance.
And it's moving this in its own regard.
This is almost a 21st century plot.
Yeah.
Set in a mid-20th century film.
It's sort of like... which is another great modern Western, Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood, sort of tackling these cliches.
It's really sort of like a Paul Thomas Anderson's take on a Western.
Yeah.
In a way.
We're going to turn it on its head.
Turn it on its head, and let's add another level to the characters and to the story. Let's get a little bit deeper than we have.
Right. But what's so great about the film, though, is that it humanizes the characters. It's not just, oh, we're this, we're that, this symbol, this metaphor. We're still going to have these three dimensions. We're still going to have these characters as people.
So, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance only got one Oscar nomination in 1962.
Oh, really?
Do you know what that was without looking? Not that you would. It's a difficult
writing.
No. Screenplay. That's a good guess. That's a really good guess. Well, it should have gotten a lot more than it did. It got the best costume design, black and white. Can you guess who designed the costume? I'm putting you on the spot. I'm sorry.
I have no idea.
She
Edith
Hedger. Exactly. Well,
she was involved.
She was
much
everything.
Back then. Yeah.
She was everything. So she got an Oscar nomination for The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
You know, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, I know the 60s really, we were starting to get some great films in the 60s, especially the late 60s. But I'm wondering if this movie confused people. Was it a box office hit?
Well, I don't know.
We need to look that up.
I think
curious.
Critically it was...
Because it was sort of at odds with people wanted to see with it from a John Wayne Western.
My research has given me mixed information as far as how it was received critically.
At the time.
I've read that it was received critically very poorly, and I've also read that it was...
I wonder how did audiences respond? What was the box office?
I don't know. Should we pause the podcast?
Well, I'm curious to see, compared to other films of the day.
Let's see. So supposedly, according to Wikipedia, the budget was $3.2 million, the box office was $8 million.
A net of five.
So I'm not sure how that translates into...
What were some of the other big hits that year? I'm curious.
In
62, off the top of my head, I can't think.
Let me see. Okay.
West Side Story.
Yearly. Let's go down to... It only goes down to 80.
80.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe
wow. I'll be on the internet.
You got two Spielbergs right in a row.
Of course you do.
Raiders and E.T.
Two of the biggest movies of all time.
I mean, that's a good earning, but I'm not sure how that
compares. I'd like to see how it compares to
that. Yeah.
But, and look, there were some bigger budgeted films in the 62, I'm sure, that made more.
Right.
But I'm curious if this movie was taken as a hit, you know, considering the theme. If it challenged moviegoers at the time. Because, you know, this is before the day of really independent film and all that, you know.
Yeah.
If audiences were used to this.
Well, you know, they got used to it by
67,
didn't
they? They only got one Academy Award, which is kind of surprising, actually.
Yeah, 67, they were just starting to get used to it. 66 and 67.
Well, that's true. But John Ford, John Wayne.
4 or 5 years before.
Did the movie, you know, do well because of the stars and the director?
I think
the genre.
You know, as I said, I've read conflicting statements, but it either did well decades after the fact because they saw how important
it finally sunk in
the story was, or
that's why I love this movie. By the way, I think it's, and I would love to go back and do a survey of John Ford films. Period. You know, not just the John Wayne films. I mean, he made The Grapes of Wrath. He made How Green Was My Valley, which is a wonderful movie.
So this is the year that Lawrence of Arabia, The Longest Day, The Music Man, Mutiny on the Bounty, and To Kill a Mockingbird was nominated.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
So The Music Man and Mutiny on the Bounty could have easily been left off, and you could have had.
I have not seen Mutiny on the Bounty, but I've seen. Yeah, I like The Music Man. I think it's a good movie. But I don't know about that. I would have preferred Valance over Music Man.
You've got The Miracle Worker, you've got Divorced Italian Style, both great films nominated for.
Now, you can't go wrong with To Kill a Mockingbird and The Lawrence of Arabia.
I definitely would have put John Ford for The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance as best director over Frank Perry's David and Lisa. But you know the people.
Now, in your Wizard of Oscar, you've done 62.
Yes.
So you've seen all these movies.
Yes, I have. Yeah. So. Divorce Italian Style is a great movie. I'm not the biggest Lawrence of Arabia fan.
I love it.
I have the utmost respect for David Lean. I think he's fantastic.
Have you seen Great Expectations?
Yes.
That's on my list.
It's incredible.
Yeah, from the 40s.
It's an incredible movie. Very engaging.
It's on my list to watch.
And I love Dickens' writing. I'm a big fan of his
books.
Yeah,
I am too.
But that movie, as old as it is riveting. But I do think that The Men Who Shot Liberty Valance should definitely have been nominated. I've seen.
But you're okay with Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, that's a classic.
It definitely should have been in over Mutiny on the Bounty. I thought that was
okay. What were the nominees again for Best Picture?
Lawrence of Arabia, Longest Day, Music Man, Mutiny on the Bounty.
I have not seen The Longest Day. No, that is on my list.
That needs to be there. That's a great movie.
That's on Netflix, I think.
Yeah, Mutiny on the Bounty is Marlon Brando.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a joke, as far as I'm concerned. It's not that great.
And Music Man is a good movie. It's a great musical, but Valance is important. Let's face it.
Now, these are the days where if it's a musical with a decent set design, it's going to get nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, because of the production values.
So, yeah.
Okay,
well,
interesting.
I really enjoyed this conversation with you.
Absolutely, as
always. About The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Thank you so much for coming up with this movie to watch. I'm so glad I watched it. You know, I almost watched it 9 years ago.
Oh, you did?
A friend recommended it
to me. So you've known about this film?
I've known about it, just never got around to watching
it. Same here.
Had a movie club. It ended right the week before we were going to watch, or the month before we were going to watch The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Really?
So I just never picked it up back up. Yeah.
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm kind of sad that I missed out on almost a decade of knowing about this movie, but I'm glad I finally watched it.
Yeah, I knew it was one we had to see.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
Yeah, so thanks for your thoughts. Some good comments there. Listeners, please watch this movie if you haven't yet.
It's Netflix not, streaming.
It was not Easy on access. My shelf of shame. But it should have been on my shelf of shame. And it is on Netflix streaming. So check it out immediately. Sayonara.
No pressure.
My good friends. Good night.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.